Hey, what's up? This is your girl, Taylor Wilde. Welcome back to Wild On Season 5, the podcast where you get the insider's view of the weird, wild world of wrestling and witchcraft. On Wednesdays, I just want to say a big thank you to all my wild ones, all my faithful listeners, and all my witchcraft enthusiasts. It's been a really hard month for myself, the Wild On team, and my chosen and genetic family. This podcast is about transparency and just generally being honest about life and being vulnerable. I lost a really important member of my family. It was sudden, he was young, and know that I love all of you for your support. I appreciate everyone who's reached out, and it's allowed me and given me the strength to continue doing what I love, and that's wrestling, and that's making this podcast, and connecting with all of you. Today's guest is a sister of the moon. She was a published author at 16 years old. She's an internationally recognized journalist, The Rolling Stone, Glamour, Spin, Playboy. She's pretty much done it all. She's also an interviewer extraordinaire. NWA, MTV, VH1, the Academy Awards, the Oscars. You may have heard of these, you know, small platforms. She's also a 90s geek, a witch, a music lover, a sober sister, and an all-around queen. Ladies and gentlemen, my girl, Myra Diaz Gomez. Okay, truthfully, I am so fucking honored to have you on my show.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I feel like, and you know, I could be jumping the gun here, but I feel like there's a real soul connection between you and I and the lives we live.
Yeah, I feel like we have a lot of things in common.
Yes.
And to start with your background and all your witchy stuff, my room basically looks like that as well.
Okay, let's start there. Perfect. So tell me about your connection to witchcraft. Tell me about your connection to spirituality. I want to hear all the wonderful
things. Yeah, so basically I don't usually talk about this very publicly, but I'm an extremely spiritual person and I am a Wiccan, actually.
Okay.
I kind of studied witchcraft for the past like 6 or 7 years of my life. And I pretty much daily do my candle spells and my tarot. And I have a really, really deep connection with spirituality and the spirit world, really. I truthfully believe in it.
Oh, so we're not, this isn't a soul connection. We're sisters. We've lived this life before.
Sisters of the moon, baby.
Okay. So, I'm so excited. How long ago did you start your journey?
I think about like 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay. Do you know what the moment was that inspired it?
I've always been super into witchcraft since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like watching Sabrina the Teenage Witch and The Craft and all those movies. Those are some of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
But I actually really believed in magic and spirits when I was a child. Mm-hmm. I wrote a lot about stuff like that. Like I was a writer since I was really young and I loved writing stories about witches and spirits and stuff like that. And when I was really, really young, I was actually kind of really obsessed with spirit games types of stuff. So where like,
okay,
I would take like a Ouija board to school, for example, and have like sessions during lunch times with the kids, or me and my friend Yajmi, we would like make up different spells to do during the day, and we had like spirit investigations. We were always like looking for spirits when we were young, so I always feel like I had this like really deep interest in that. And then in the 8th grade we had this year-long project that we had to do.
Yeah,
like we had to choose a subject that we had to investigate for the whole year and write it sort of like a booklet about it, and mine was about witchcraft. So I feel like it's always been there, but then I rediscovered it a few years ago when I was in a place where I needed spirituality, sort of.
Oh, yeah. I think the people I always feel most bonded with are the ones that really came into this in childhood and it was an organic thing. And then, you know, you're told to, you know, it's all in your head. You try to be cool. You try to fit in. And
I never thought it was all in my head. Never.
I knew I was weird. I knew I was different. And actually, the craft, although the ideology is very cool, it's very 90s and grunge and it's iconic and it's a cult classic, it was the first time that I watched a movie in my early, like, I can't remember, early teens, preteens, that I was like, it's not just me. It's not just me that thinks this way. It's not just me that has this, like, obsession with the occult, because I didn't really have any girlfriends that were into it. And you're almost afraid to talk about it because you're the demonic kid. You're the kid that believes in all this weird shit. And even to this day, I've had so many spiritual interactions and so many. Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Now,
feel weird to talk about it because so many people will question you and not believe you. But I truthfully believe in it.
You found it in a place when you really needed it, or you reintegrated with it. And usually you're at such a low place in your life and you've kind of broken open and that's how you're letting all this back in. But at the same time, I was in a place where I was really open to letting negative energy and negative entities have the ability to attach to me. And it was really, really scary. Have you had any interactions with, like, negative entities?
Yeah, when I was younger, mostly when I was a teenager and I was doing a lot of drugs, that's mostly when sort of those interactions would happen to me.
Okay.
Like very vivid dreams or hearing things or several different types of things like that would happen to me when I was younger.
To me, us talking about it is just so normal. It's like, oh, yeah, I experienced that. You experienced that? Wonderful. But people can really believe, like, these girls are crazy. It's in their heads.
It's so crazy because I've actually never spoken about this.
I'm so honored.
Yeah.
Then I have to send you our new shirt, the Coven shirt, which is just like a total homage to the craft.
I would love that.
Oh, well, thank you so much for trusting me and allowing this to be a safe space for you to talk about spirituality.
When I saw that was the theme of your show, I was like, come on, dude, we got to do this. Time. But it's so funny because I always loved being weird. So I never felt like weird was bad.
No.
And when I was young, like, I loved wearing all black. And I had my best friend in school, Yasmin, who's nowadays is a international supermodel. But we loved wearing black and doing our witchcraft stuff. And at some point when we were kids, we came up with this band that we had that was called the Weird Girls. Kind of like owned it and we're like, yeah, we're weird. And it came from both of us liking this boy in school who we had a crush on. And he said that he didn't like us because we were weird. Okay. And so we made a band called the Weird Girls.
The most rebellious punk rock thing. Oh, you don't like me because I'm weird? Let me show you.
Always. I've always been very rebellious.
Are you an Aquarius?
I'm Sagittarius.
Similar. You're more optimistic. Do you know what your moon sign is or your rising sign?
Virgo.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So you're very, very organized and you see through everything, but the Sagittarius keeps you optimistic and dreamy.
Yep.
Oh, I love this.
I have a lot of Virgo characteristics where I'm like, I like to have control of things. I'm very much on time. I'm never late for anything. I plan things ahead. And at the same time, I'm like the crazy, adventurous, wild Sagittarius.
I love the balance. I'm just insane. I'm an Aquarius, double Leo. So it's just like fire and air, just constantly all over the place. But all my closest friends are earth signs or have like one of their top three, like their rising moon or sun is earth, because I need that fucking balance. I need it. I haven't attached myself to a specific religion. It's all been about my own daily practices, what I believe in. But I'm still, you know, every day is different. And that's the best part about witchcraft. You make it to yourself. It's so
personal. You make
it
your own. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to identify as anything. I just identify as that because I actually, like, studied it. And I sort of follow it, the principles of it.
Yeah. And that's what makes witchcraft really cool. And what people don't understand is it is very welcoming to everybody. You don't have to follow a model to identify as witchy or a spiritual being. It's just how you can find and resonate with the highest version of yourself.
Right. And witchcraft is energy. So everybody is a witch. You just have to discover it within yourself, pretty much, I believe.
Completely. And I love candle magics. Me I'm too. So glad that you touched on that. Me I feel too. Like it's so powerful.
So powerful.
Anything to do with fire. Like I like burning ceremonies. I like burning like bay leaves and writing messages on them.
Mm-hmm.
Are you really connected to moon cycles as well?
Definitely. Yep. It's a new moon today and I'm really ready to write my intention and to light my candle.
What a beautiful way to start. Like this is the day we were supposed to do this. This right? is why I kept getting delayed.
Yeah. I have
new
it,
beginnings.
Like, I have it like on my calendar. New moon, full moon, you know, so I won't forget it. I love the new moons when you set the intention. And by the full moon, many, many times, my intention has happened. Yeah, I feel like I'm a very powerful manifester, like I have been my whole life.
Yeah, me too. And it for me, only in my later years did I actually start writing it down. I always just thought I lived in my head and I had a powerful imagination. But really, I was manifesting and like just visioning what I wanted, how I was going to get there, what it would feel like. I spent a lot of my time thinking about what it felt like when I was already there versus the journey. Did you find yourself doing a lot of the same?
Not really. Like, I think I always had like extreme awareness that this is what I was doing. Like, I am creating a spell. I am writing down what I want to happen. Like, I was always very straightforward with that.
And your writing career started, like your first published novel was, you were 17 years old?
16, yeah.
Girl.
To start with that, you know, at 16 years old, I wrote my first novel. And by 19 years old, that was a bestseller. If that's not manifestation, then I don't know what it is, you know, because it's wild. And I dropped out of school in the ninth grade. I had a very difficult period during my teenage years where I lost my father when I was 11 years old. And I went through like a period of rebelliousness and pretty much not conforming to anybody. That's what I was mentioning. I was always very rebellious. I always did whatever I wanted. Yes. And a lot of things happened to me during my teenage years that made me not be in the school that I was in. Some traumatic events happened to me when I was 15 years old and I didn't want to be in school anymore. At that time, I started using a lot of drugs. I was going through depression and using a lot of drugs. And I told my mom, I don't want to go to school. I'm ready to start my life. And, you know, obviously my mom didn't want me to quit school when I was 15 years old. But basically, I was just like doing drugs in the school bathroom and hiding and doing everything I could not to go to class. And I was expelled by the end of the year. And so now I'm a high school dropout, 15 years old. My mom's so upset with me. Like, what are you going to do with your life? And all that kind of stuff. You know, she was very angry. And I told her, I'm going to be a best-selling author. And how crazy is it that I actually made that happen, you know? So it all comes down to being a witch.
You powerful witch. We love this. Yeah.
Like when I'm giving other interviews, I'll never say because I'm a witch. But since I'm talking to you.
When in Rome. And just for our listeners who maybe don't know your history, what was your first novel about?
So it was partly a memoir about all the stuff that was going on with me as a teenager. So basically my father dying in a car accident when I was 11 years old. And then me dealing with depression, my drug use, this traumatic event that happened to me, which I don't care about mentioning, but I was raped when I was in school. And, you know, I told my mom, I'm going to write about all of this and people are going to relate to my story. And my mom was actually really supportive at the time. And she said, absolutely, write it. And my mom was actually the one who helped me get a publishing company. So she was super supportive of it. And it turned out that really, really a lot of teenagers in Brazil did relate to it. I was suddenly like on the cover of newspapers and going on television shows and all this stuff happened to me out of the honesty that I put down in paper by writing my story and all the turmoil that I was going through at that age.
What a beautiful, incredible release
yeah.
for yourself.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was on such a public platform, but you took the power back out of that situation, putting pen to paper, sharing your story, and having it reach to so many that were probably hurting in the same way you were. Like, that is the most incredible gift you could have given back to the universe. And from what I'm hearing, from what I know about you, that's coming back times 10.
Yeah. I feel like vulnerability is a superpower. Like, once you are comfortable with being vulnerable and you have self-awareness and you're just yourself, you know, it's a superpower yeah. because nobody can hurt you. You're telling people what your flaws are. You're telling people what you went through. So nobody can hurt you. And it just makes you really, really powerful.
That's the best way to put it, because I always say I'm messy and I'm really sarcastic and I always lead with humor. But vulnerability is one of the hardest things I have had to come into. And it's because I was raised my whole life to have this veil very much be in my masculine, and vulnerability was a weakness and emotions right. were a weakness. And I'm realizing that is so fucking ass backwards. There is nothing stronger than someone who is just authentic and allowing the world to know exactly how they feel, because it's not our job to make other people feel comfortable. And I think that's what I was really protecting.
And I think that you can also express emotion without being emotional, because I am actually not a super emotional person at this point in my life. Like, I'm very aware and in control of my emotional reactions, but I am yes. able to express my emotions in a calm way. So that right. makes it powerful, you know, because I'm not out of control with how I'm putting my emotions out there.
And Florence Shivel Shin, one of the first women to write about manifestation in the late 1800s, she wrote that book, Your Word is Your Wand. And I feel like that is, besides being a manifester, that is your superpower. You put your word and published it, and all this magic has happened as a result, and you've been able to take it all back and control what could have potentially broken
yeah.
you. But it sounds like your relationship with drugs is probably akin to the relationship I've had with alcohol my whole life. And I'm thankful for alcohol at a time in my life or times in my life, because I don't know if I would have been able to survive where I was in my journey, because I wasn't healed. I was just walking around this like raw trigger. But now I couldn't imagine getting through the things in my life that have happened without sobriety.
Right.
And you're a sober sister. Do you want to talk about your journey with sobriety?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm 2 years and almost 5 months sober.
Congratulations.
Thank you. How long are you sober?
1 year, over 1 year from alcohol.
That's amazing.
Thank you. And then, you know, a lot of people are like California sober yeah. where they smoke yeah. weed, but I'm close to a year of being
That's
California
amazing.
Sober
Congratulations.
As well. Thank you.
Yeah. So like,
there's no looking back.
So like I was saying, like I started using drugs when I was really young, basically when I was 14, 15 years old. And I've told this story many times, but to me at the time, drugs were a very glamorized thing. And I really looked up to like rock stars and rock and roll. And in school, I had like all these feelings of like rejection, and boys that I liked didn't like me back. And I was dealing with like the loss of my father, and I was very yeah. insecure. Like I felt very unattractive. And, you know, I started doing drugs really young. And when I realized that, you know, it gave me confidence and, you know, it made me a more open person and more fun, and that was it for me. Like, I just loved drugs, and I experimented with like everything possible when I was young. Like, I wanted to do every drug on the planet. Like, I bought a book about drugs and was like, I have done this one, I haven't done that one. I wanted to do it.
Wow.
All.
So you were a Virgo even in full addiction.
This
Sorry,
is like the beginning
joke,
of it, you know, like it was all about like experimentation okay. and it felt like very freeing to me. I struggled with that for the majority of my life. You know, I was a drinker too, heavy drinker at several different points of my life. And I always felt that it's impossible to live without alcohol because I was so dependent on alcohol for so many different situations, you know, to socialize, to go on a date, to be at a party, to be at a concert, to, like so many different situations where I'm like, there's no way I can live without alcohol.
And it's so
It's so
normalized.
normalized, of course. And so it was only like 2 years and 5 months ago when I came to a point where it really was rock bottom because it was during the lockdowns and I was at home just drinking tequila all day. Like I would wake up in the morning and start drinking at like 9 a.m. in the morning. I'd be like, oh, it's 9 o'clock, time to start. And I dealt with like panic attacks for many years in my life. That's a lot of it comes back to the panic attacks because it's all related to my father dying. I was 11 years old and I woke up late for school and my aunts who lived with me and my sister at the time told me that my parents had been in a car accident, but they said that they were in the hospital in this different city in Brazil, São Paulo, which they had traveled to. But I was 11 years old. I knew how to connect to the internet. And so I did. And the homepage was like a news page. And so I found out that my dad died through an internet article when I was 11 years old and saw photos of it. And so,
And for our listeners that don't know, you come from a very like famous family in
yes. So my
Brazil.
father was a very famous writer. So it was like headline news. And that's how I found out. And that's partly where my rebelliousness comes from, where I always thought, like, nobody has, you know, nobody can tell me what to do anymore, you
No,
know.
of course. You felt that at the probably the most vulnerable moment of your life, the people who are supposed to be there for you the most didn't tell
It
you
wasn't
that
her
you lost your
fault.
father.
Like she had been
No,
instructed
of
by like the
course.
television network that my father works for to tell me and my sister really slowly, which I think was really stupid and changed the whole course of my life, you know, with that
Oh,
one
God.
advice. But
I'm
anyways,
so
so like
sorry.
this triggered like this huge fear of loss that I kind of experienced through the majority of my life, where whenever I was alone, I would have like horrible debilitating panic attacks. And when I was in relationships, anytime I lived with the guy, like I was married for 10 years, and he would walk through the door, I would have these panic attacks where I think they were never coming back because I was a kid and my dad went to dinner and a play and he never came back. So I always thought when somebody walks out and I love them, they're never going to come back. And so I'd have like these horrible, horrible panic attacks for so many years. And during lockdowns, the panic attacks got completely out of control because I was by myself and I was drinking tequila. And every night, basically, I started feeling like I wanted to die or I was going to die. And I would just wake up in the morning like terrified that by the end of the day I was gonna have another one. And you know, I was so annoying with my friends where I had to have friends come and sleep over and stay with me or be on the phone with me for hours. You know, and it just got to a point where it was kind of like you have to do something about it because you're going to kill yourself one of these days. And that was very real.
Of course.
So
Of course.
yeah, so I looked for a doctor and the doctor told me that we had to get me sober because the panic attacks could be connected to my alcohol abuse. And by not drinking, I could maybe stop these panic attacks. And my whole life experiencing this extremely debilitating thing, nobody had ever told me that it was possible to maybe not have that. You know, I thought this is part of my life forever. I have panic attacks. And wildly enough, I got sober and my panic attacks stopped. I don't have more panic attacks.
Oh my God, that's be I'm so happy for you, number one. But where I actually feel like our deepest connection is, one is witchcraft, but two, here you are, this incredibly stunning, intelligent woman who's gone through her whole life being an overachiever. You're a journalist. You've had published work done. You have been on red carpets. You've been to the Oscars, the Academy Awards. You're a model, not just a model. You've done the cover of Playboy, and you've probably heard your whole life people going, "How do you find the time to do all these things?" And underneath it all, you're traumatized. And what people don't understand is a lot of women and men going through the world that appear as overachievers, we are the most decimated humans inside. We are looking not for external validation, but like, because there's something in us that is so hurt, so vulnerable, so broken, we are like these energizer bunnies that you can't match us in the work world, because we're like, okay, for what's lacking in our emotional hearts, we're gonna do. And would you say that like for you, being an overachiever, working really hard is about a bit of a trauma response?
As you're saying that, I'm agreeing to you, but this is the first time that I've ever thought of myself as an overachiever, which is crazy, because even though it's a crazy feeling that I have, and I still have it now. Like, I just did the cover of Playboy, like you said. I have another cover coming up, actually, but I always feel like I am not doing enough, and I can't seem to shake this feeling. It doesn't matter what I accomplish, I always want to accomplish more. So I feel like the more I do, the more I think I have to do, you know?
And yes, as you're
saying that, I'm like, yeah, that could might very well be a trauma response. And now with sobriety, also a way of staying sober, because I'm trying to keep myself busy as much as I can.
That is one of the pieces that I'm working on now. And it's funny because for our listeners, I'm happy to share, I massively burnt myself out, because with having an addict's mentality, I am an addict, a high functioning addict. I don't drink anymore. Drugs have never been a huge part of my life. Like I said, California sober, but I am a workaholic. What people don't understand is addiction can appear one way, where you associate that with like binge drinkers or non-functioning mm-hmm. drug addicts, but also people who are really high achievers tend to have addicts like mentality, because you just go. You're chasing a high. The more you do, the more you can do. The problem is you don't have the foresight to pull back, because it's all you have. You're trying to distract yourself.
Well, it's the whole dopamine thing too, right? So as addicts, we're always looking for that dopamine. And when you don't have the dopamine from the drugs, you're trying to find it elsewhere. So now I try to find dopamine in all these different things. And I am very aware that I need dopamine. I am diagnosed with ADHD, so I have low dopamine. So I am in constant search for that. And that doesn't change for me, regardless of being drinking or being sober, because it's from my ADHD. You know, and so
because
I don't get that from the alcohol and drugs now, where do I get it? So it's that continuous mm-hmm. chase. And like you said, when things slow down, like when you're doing it, you're always like, oh my God, I want a free day. I'm sober now. I just want to rest. I just want to be home. I'm wrestling here. I'm doing that show, blah, 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 traveling back and forth 5 times between West and East Coast in a month. I just want to be home and rest. And then you get home and what happens, your dopamine drops. You immediately become kind of like, you go into like a panic mode of like, what do I do now? You don't know how to rest. You don't know how to be still. And so you go again. And then you burn
Absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely. I am you and I are the same.
I get it.
I feel like that. This is a beautiful connection, because like, I feel like we're mirroring each other, and I would love someone I could check in with to hold me accountable. And I'd love to hold you accountable because we're on the same trajectory. Like, as soon as I see gaps in my calendar, I'm like, well, I could do a photo shoot there, or I could get some content done there. Or I have started to, and maybe this is something you could do too, I literally book days in my calendar where one rest day a week is terrifying for me, but I do at least one full rest day, and I try to not do 4,000 things, because I'll go, oh, it's a rest day. So I'll get a massage, I'll get a facial, I'll get my nails done. That is not rest day.
This is today for me. Today is my rest day, and like, bullshit, it's not my rest day at all.
You're doing an interview.
Then I go get my makeup done. Then I have a dinner tonight. Then I'm going to a concert.
Okay, yeah. I get it. I get you.
But it's like the other day you're working, so like, I want to do fun stuff too. Like,
it's so hard. It is so hard. And sorry, we kind of got away from it, but I do want to say congratulations on your cover of Playboy. That's incredible.
Yes, it's amazing.
Have you had a moment to digest it?
No,
because you're like, what's next?
Because I'm already working on the next thing. Yeah,
of course you are.
I feel like I'm gonna look back at it in a few years and go like, oh my God, I did the cover of Playboy. I still have kind of like a little bit of like imposter syndrome, Like somebody's like, "Oh, you're on the cover of Playboy. You're a
Okay.
playmate." And I go like, "Yeah, I guess." Like,
Yeah, but you're like, you are very, I've seen like covers and little like clickbait things on the internet. It's like you're being called the next Hollywood it girl. You're the next Brazilian it girl in
extremely
LA.
high
Like,
praise and exactly what makes me feel like an imposter. But very
you're
grateful.
like, I'm
Thank
just
you. Thank
existing.
you.
Okay, so when did you come to
I
LA?
moved here when I was 21. So I had released my
Okay.
first book. It had become a bestseller by the time I was 19. And then I started working as a journalist. The first job I had as a
Yeah.
journalist, I started writing for the largest newspaper in Brazil. The editor had read my book and discovered me and asked me if I wanted to be a columnist for the newspaper. So I started working as a music journalist when I was 19. And so I had the column and very popular newspaper and other magazines and different outlets, started inviting me to write for them as well. So like I had a segment on MTV News where I used to review books, and I wrote for so many magazines, like every magazine you can imagine, like Spin,
Yeah.
Glamour, Rolling Stone, Hollywood Reporter. Just like I had a very long and successful career as like an entertainment writer.
It's
And by the time I
amazing.
was 19, I had already done so much as a journalist, but I
Yeah.
was going back to that feeling I told you, still felt like I wasn't doing enough, still felt like I wanted
Yep.
more,
I get
still
it.
felt like I was empty, and moved to the United States. Had a crazy dream of moving to Hollywood to become a rock and roll journalist, and packed up my bags at 21 and moved all by myself. Yeah.
Wow. Just no fear.
I
Just
had no
go.
fear. I was very excited.
And how has life shifted for you from growing up in Brazil and you live there throughout your formative years, your teenage years? New country, LA is not for the faint of
I feel
heart.
like I fit in very well in LA, honestly. I love LA. I know people have so much criticism towards LA, but I love LA. I still live in Hollywood. I've been in Hollywood now for almost 15 years. Yes, and I moved here
Wow.
and I was 21, and stuff really did start working out for me. Like, I immediately started working as a correspondent. So I got like lots of really huge Hollywood interviews. Like the little experience I had in Brazil with music, now I'm like in Hollywood and I'm interviewing major superstars, and I'm like still 21 years old. So everything
The
worked out.
power of
Yeah, and I had
manifestation.
like before moving
Yep.
here, I had like the whole vision board, and I would do like my collages with the vision boards of the things I wanted to happen in Hollywood, and a lot of those things happened.
Love it. I get the spiritual chills whenever you talk about what you've accomplished because I know, one, of course, you have incredible work ethic and obviously your resume speaks for itself. You're stunning, but there's a lot of people with that, and the difference is your mind, your heart, and your spirit and your connection to witchcraft. I will support you in that. That's
Blessed
what
be,
makes you different.
baby.
Witchcraft has brought you to. Bless it be. Love it. Okay, so we're sober. We're thriving. We don't have panic attacks anymore. Now we're in
Yes.
professional wrestling.
What the
What the
fuck?
fuck?
Yeah, so
How did we get
yeah,
here?
another crazy story in my life. Like I always
Okay.
tell people, I didn't grow up with wrestling. I didn't watch wrestling growing up because it wasn't a thing in Brazil. Brazil's very into
Yep.
their soccer and, lately into their
Of
MMA,
course.
but wrestling was never really a thing in Brazil. I
Okay.
knew of like the most popular wrestling figures, like, Hulk Hogan and Chyna and stuff like that. Like I remember I thought Chyna was amazing when I was a child, but I didn't grow up watching it.
Yes.
And I only started watching like in my early 30s, like when I was already here for a really long time. And I had already worked for several years as a journalist. I had gone through my separation from my ex-husband. And so I was living by myself for the first time and experiencing the panic attacks that I told you about and dealing with my
Yes.
alcoholism. And I was in a super low point. And this is like a theme in my life where many times when I'm in a really low point, I have some wild, crazy idea that everyone else thinks is insane. And I think this is what's going to do it for me. And so I was watching like
Yep.
WWE, watching girls wrestling to me, it all came from the women, because when I watched the men wrestling, I didn't get the same feeling. But when I watched the women, it was really, really inspirational to me. Like, I thought the women were so beautiful, powerful, strong, confident. They were like the role models of what I thought I was inside, but I wasn't on the outside yet. Like, I felt like I was a superhero inside, but how do I become a superhero on the outside? And it really inspired me. And I thought, you know, that's what I want to do. I think I want to be a professional wrestler. Like, insane, out of the blue. And went online and Googled, how do you become a professional wrestler? Right?
Thank God for the internet.
And read, oh, you have to go to wrestling school. I was like, that's incredible. Because I was looking for something to do at that point in my life where I was by myself. I wanted to reinvent myself. I was depressed. I was not really into being a journalist anymore, because there were no such things as magazines happening anymore. And, you know, you don't get paid the same anymore. Everything changed in the industry that I used to work in. And I'm like, I'm ready to do something new. And I found this school in Vegas, FSW, Future Stars of Wrestling, sent them an email. They wrote me back and said, yeah, come down. And so the decision was like literally overnight. Like, I told people, I'm moving to Vegas tomorrow to become a professional wrestler. And people are like, what?
Love it. Cutthroat.
Like, you're not an athlete. You know, you never done any sports professionally. I loved boxing and MMA. So I used to do like boxing and MMA workouts, but nothing professional. My cardio sucked. Wow. I was not strong enough. I was not flexible enough. You know, I did not know how to bump. You know, I did not know how to roll. All the things.
All the things. Everything working against
but
you.
But I went. And so I moved to Vegas.
Yep.
Started living like in the hotels and the casinos. I moved around the entire city for like 6 months so I could be there. Because the different price changes, like the price changes every week. So I'd be like in a cheaper hotel in the beginning of the week. Then in the weekend, it gets more expensive. Then I have to find another one. So basically, it's going like back and forth for several months.
Wow.
And I fell in love with it. And as soon as I walked into the school the first day, I was like, I want to do this. This is so hard. This is the hardest thing I've ever done. And it makes me cry that it's so hard. But also, I cry because I am proud of myself, you know? I was really proud of myself that I had the guts to go there, walk into that school with no experience and be like, this is what I'm going to do now.
And you dropped everything.
Yeah.
You left your home. You were living out of a hotel. Like, if anybody ever says anything like you didn't earn your stripes, like, you put everything into training. And so how long had you been training before you had picked up notoriety, or Billy Corgan reached out to you about NWA? How did that beautiful
relationship? It was in like 6 months, which is crazy. Wow. Yeah, I had been in the school for about 6 months. And at some point, I couldn't bear living in Las Vegas anymore. Like, I was definitely drinking the whole time I was in Vegas. So I'd go to school during the day, and at night I would drink, you know, and then I'd recover for the morning and then go back to school. Insanity. You know, bumping with a hangover. Wow. So terrible.
Pretty much the worst thing you could be doing hungover. Terrible. Really.
And then,
wow.
At some point I came back and I thought, you know, people are right. I'm never going to be a professional wrestler. You know, I don't want to be in Vegas anymore. And I don't know if I have like the determination to stay there. And I don't know what's going to happen. You know, is there even a future in any of this for me? Like, I was still really new, green, not a great wrestler at all, learning, you know, basic step, basic learning still.
Yep.
Again, talking about insane manifestation, I had been in a Smashing Pumpkins music video 2 years prior to this.
Ah, it's amazing.
So, and I knew Billy, of course. Like, I grew up loving the Smashing Pumpkins. I'm a huge rock fan. I met him before. And so he came to my page out of the blue, followed me. And on my bio, it said Future Star of Wrestling, because that was the name of my school. And I had a photo in front of the school with a Smashing Pumpkins shirt. Right.
Oh, my God.
So Billy sees that the day he comes to my page and sends me a message and asks, hey, Myra, are you wrestling? And I'm like, wow. I'm still in school. You know, I haven't had my debut match yet. I am not a great wrestler yet, but I'm training, I'm working at it, I want to take it seriously, you know, And he started talking to me about joining the NWA and was like, you could, you know, come in as a manager, valet, and kind of work yourself up. And I started training with one of the NWA wrestlers. So he's like, you can come and we'll see if it works out. And so there you go. In 6 months, I was hired by the NWA.
Love it. And now, would you say that you have the wrestling bug? Like, I know you worked for it and you had a little wobbly moment where you thought, okay, this isn't going to happen. Billy Corgan hits you up in the most, like, the fact that you had a Smashing Pumpkins t-shirt on the one day.
My zero shirt.
So you've got the bug now.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. The best. Yeah. The shirt. Oh, my goodness. So what are your goals and aspirations? I know that's a really generic question, but is there a match you want to have one day? What is your, just because you're someone who's so goal-oriented and you're always thinking about the next thing, what do you want to do in wrestling?
After the pandemic, because the show had paused and a lot of things changed and the wrestler that I was working with actually left the company. So Billy thought of putting me in the role of the backstage reporter, which was what I do now. So I've been the backstage reporter for 3 years now. And I kind of feel like that's my spot. I feel like everything kind of clicked because that's my experience my whole life is with journalism and interviewing people. But now I have the wrestling knowledge that I got from going to school and experiencing the wrestling. And I just feel like this is the spot for me.
And I feel like that's when your platform took off. I followed everything. I went all the back catalogs. And I think the best backstage interviewers or hosts or color commentary always comes from those people who have had the organic wrestling experience.
Right.
And had you not made that leap, like it would have been a lateral movement for you going from journalism to backstage interviewing. But because you had that time,
I would have not understood anything. I mean, wrestling is a very complex universe, right?
Completely. And niche as fuck.
Exactly. Like, people outside of wrestling have no idea what I'm talking about, right? And I would have no idea if I hadn't gone through wrestling.
Oh, I think it's so cool. And I'm so glad that you've made it into this world and that we've been able to become aligned with each other, because you're not going to be able to get rid of me now.
I love it.
But I feel like we could keep talking. We haven't even scratched the surface. We're probably going to have to do a part two. But I would love to do my top 10 tailor-made questions with you. It's not a speed round, but just to kind of change gears. And it's just always great getting these answers from people. Okay,
let's
are we
it.
Ready? Okay. Have you thought, we're going to go dark, straight with the dark.
Oh, shit.
Have you thought about your funeral and your funeral song? What would your ceremony look like?
Oh, my God. I have not thought about my funeral or my funeral song. However, I do imagine myself dying all the time and wonder who would be sad, who would post about me, what kinds of things people would write, you know, which guys would ignore my death. Which ones would validate me? I think about those kinds of things. I'm always like, I wonder if that motherfucker would post about me if I died.
I love you. I get that so hard. You just touched something in my core.
I really hope so. You know, if any of you are listening to this, you better post me.
Yeah, fuckers. Oh, God. Okay, if you could create your own zodiac sign, one that doesn't exist, what three qualities would you make up? What three qualities would make up like a power sign? Like,
God. Passionate, emotionally responsible, and dependable.
Love it. Perfect.
I don't know.
Yet it's so hard to find.
Three qualities I need in somebody.
I love it. Okay, so we talked about manifestation being your witchy power. Would you say you have any other supernatural powers that we didn't touch on?
Yeah, I can hear spirits. And I can psychograph too. I can auto-write.
Really?
So that's one thing that I do on full moons. So on full moons, I auto-write. And I just sit by the moon, and whatever message I receive, I write down.
So can we do a reading for each other?
Sure.
Not right now, obviously, but in future. Yay! I love this.
Yeah, I've done the auto-writing thing for a few years. And then with the hearing thing, It's not like all the time. It's at times when I'm like deeply connected to it and looking to have that connection.
Yes.
And it's not like I hear a voice outside of my head. The voice is inside my head, but it's coming from different people and it has different advice for me. It's always advice that I listen, that I hear in my head. And sometimes I think it's from my father or from my grandmother or from my grandfather or people that have passed away. Wow. And I can kind of recognize who it's from by the way that they speak.
Because it's different than how you would speak to yourself or speak like, to others.
Yeah, it says like, blah, 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 my daughter. Or like if it's my grandparents, they'll use like slang that was used in like their city or different things like that. That makes me recognize who is talking to me. And I know that it's not coming from myself because they are things that I haven't thought of or I'm not thinking about, or they're the contrary of things that I think. Right. So I know that they're not coming from me, but I hear it inside my head.
And I imagine that's gotten stronger the more you've tuned into it, the more you've realized, okay, this isn't just me.
I go through phases. Sometimes I kind of disconnect from it, and I hate when I disconnect from it. But it just happens when you get super busy and you're not like really actively doing spiritual stuff.
That happens to me too, actually.
I need to be less busy to like concentrate and get the connection. So I haven't heard it in a while, but I have the ability to.
So that's a good reason to give yourself a day to just be in it, be spiritual.
I feel like I have to do that right now, actually.
Me too. Okay, today.
Let's do it.
Let's do it today after the interview. Now, we already touched on ghosts, our beliefs in spirits, ghosts. Do you have a ghost story you could share with us?
Sure. So one of the books that I wrote, it's called Finally Famous. Mm-hmm. It was a book that I wrote while in Hollywood, and it's a thriller based on a real story. So I used to live in this building in Hollywood that is very, very haunted.
Okay.
Famously haunted. Like, has been there since the 20s and was the building where a lot of the silent movie stars lived when they moved to Hollywood.
And
all the walls are filled with, like, photos of all these silent movie actors that lived there. It has a very, very intense, intense vibe. Like, if you ever come to Hollywood, I'll take you there. You walk into that place, your energy completely changes, but not in a good way.
Wow.
So I lived there, was the first building I ever lived in Hollywood. And while I was living there, my neighbor murdered his fiance in the hallway of the building.
Oh my God.
And so this inspired me to write this book because they had both come to Hollywood to be successful. And they became successful through this murder. So he became a famous murderer and she became a famous ghost. Wow. And so like all the tours in Hollywood that, you know, go around haunted places and talk about hauntings, etc.
Yeah.
We're now talking about my neighbor, you know, who I knew as a living person. And now she is a famous ghost.
Wow.
So this inspired me to write this book. And a lot of the book I wrote sitting in the hallway of this building. So I moved out of there very shortly after. I didn't live there for very long. Mm-hmm. It's actually like in really bad condition right now. And there's like lots of like drug dealers and there's always fucking crime going on in that building. Oh, but it's God. Like the most beautiful historic building. Charlie Chaplin once was the owner. Valentino had a speakeasy in the basement. So imagine this was like a happening 20s place where all this like madness and bad things happen and it's still standing there, you know, and bad things continue to happen there. And so I wrote a lot of this book sitting in the hallway of the building. And so many things happened where like I would dream of a ghost that lived there and he would tell me how to write a chapter. Or I don't really remember actually all the specifics. I have them written down somewhere that I can go back to. But it was just this constant thing of sitting there and being influenced by the actual spirits in the building that were like helping me write the book. And it sounds completely crazy, obviously.
No, I was going to say that sounds like the coolest fucking book I've ever heard of in my life. Like it's already in my inbox. That's fine. Like Amazon checkout. Like that's incredible.
Yeah, there were lots of like really crazy things that happened while I was writing this book. Or like I would dream of someone that I've never met before, and I would walk through the building and there would be like a picture of them on the wall. Like I knew that the spirits were helping me, and I'm not sure if in good ways or bad ways. Sometimes they were also influencing me in bad ways. Like I've had times where I've
Interesting.
gone into that building and came back and something really bad happens to me. And then I get really scared of even going in there again because I feel like
Sure.
maybe they feel like I'm exploiting them. Maybe they feel like I profited from them because my whole book, the whole story is about how Hollywood profits from these murders and these ghosts. So that's what the book is about. And there I am
Sure.
sitting there profiting from it myself. So I would often feel like, maybe the spirits in the building are mad at me. That's a
Wow.
spirit. That's
Well,
a crazy ghost story for you.
that I pretty much am not going to ask that question to anybody else because you win. There's so much to that. What's been your most embarrassing moment on screen?
Oh my gosh.
And it doesn't have to be
It
wrestling.
wasn't on screen, but a couple of times my extensions came out and
Oh.
we're just hanging there in the middle of the ring. Like, oops, here's all my
We've all
fake
been there.
hair. Like, in the ring. I'd say
We've all
probably
been
that.
there.
Yeah.
All been there. That's, girl, we all know. We all need a little bit of help. We're thin-haired sisters, especially if you're blonde, you're bald.
Yeah.
It's a rite of
You do your back
passage.
roll, then you step on your hair, and there you go. It's ouch! Like it's off.
100%. It's a rite of passage. So I love that for you. What is your biggest pet peeve? Music, wrestling, life? Tell me one.
Oh my God, I don't know. Pet peeve. Late people. I
Especially
hate
'cause
when
you
people
are
are
on
late.
time.
Five minutes late, I'm already starting to have anxiety. Like, why am I meeting this person? Why am I meeting this person?
Same.
Like,
Same. I'm like, "Oh, should I leave? It's been 5 minutes."
yeah. I hate when people are late.
What is your favorite band or artist? And it doesn't have to be of all time. It could be what you're listening to now.
That is the hardest question in the world
I
because that
knew it.
at different times there are different answers for that.
Okay.
But growing up, my favorite artist was Marilyn Manson.
Love it.
100. And I know there's a
Still,
lot to say now about
I
with everything that's going
know.
on, but not talking about that and just talking about him, his relevance as an artist and the influence that he had on so many people, I would definitely say Marilyn Manson.
I support that. I still attach some of my posts to Manson shit. Like, exactly. We are talking about the artist. We're not talking about the human being. We're just talking about his influence. I
And
completely support
we
that.
don't have a case in front of us to have an actual opinion about it, and that's how I feel.
I
One day
agree.
when I have all the facts, then probably I'll be able to have an opinion that I can, put out there publicly. But as of now, like I prefer to think of him as the artist that I grew up and that influenced me so heavily.
I fully agree. Okay, name a movie that changed your life.
Almost Famous.
Great one. Great
Has
movie.
made me
And
realize I
that's.
wanted to be a writer for Rolling Stone.
Oh, love
And
it.
I
I love
was.
that
And I
movie.
did. And I became a writer for
You
that.
did. It just didn't inspire you. You
Was
did
actually, I have a really
it.
great story about that because after
Oh.
watching Almost Famous, I was like 15 years old and writing the editor of Rolling Stone and telling him that I wanted to be a music writer. And, I would go to concerts and review the concerts and send it to the editor of Rolling Stone in Brazil. And one day he answered me and he was like, "Hey, thanks for writing us, et cetera, et cetera. You're doing a great job. The advice I can give you is keep listening to music, keep going to concerts, keep writing your stuff, and maybe one day it'll work for us." Something like that. And then many, many years later, I think I was 23, I was already living in Hollywood and had already published lots of different things, books, articles, magazines, TV, et cetera. Because when I wrote Rolling Stone, I hadn't ever done anything. I was like a teenager going, "Hello, can I be a writer for Rolling Stone? I've never written anything before, but this is what I want to do." Anyway, so fast forward the future, I've already accomplished all these things. And I wrote again, the editor of Rolling Stone. And at this time, he answered me back and said, "Sure, we'd love to work with you." And so one of the first stories that I
Love
wrote for
it.
Rolling Stones was about the West Memphis 3 case. I was very, very connected to that case. I'm sure you know all about it too.
Yep.
And I also conviction. Have a really crazy connection to that because I was really obsessed with the case. Like, I felt it very, very deeply, especially because of the fact that, you know, Damien Echols was convicted based on, like, the kind of music that he listened to and wearing black and being, you know, listening to heavy metal and horror books. And I really related to that, like, that there was not enough evidence against Damien except for, you know, the prejudice that people had against the way that he looked and the music that he listened to. So I was very, very, very connected to this case and, you know, watched the documentary. Actually, I learned about it from Marilyn Manson, watched the documentary and was just obsessed. And so I followed this Twitter, this page that was official Damien Echols, but of course he was incarcerated. And, you know, there was no hope that Damien would come out of jail. He was, you know, sentenced to death. He was in, you know, on death row. And I followed that page, and that page said, if Damien Echols ever comes out of jail, we are going to give this Twitter to him. And I followed that, but there was no light at the end of the tunnel at that time. Anyway, fast forward a few years later, I had actually made a West Memphis 3 dress to wear to the Revolver Golden God Awards carpet that I was a host at, because that's how much into it I was. Many years later, finally, you know, they are released. Damien is released from death row, the first man ever released from death row in Arkansas. And they give him the Twitter page. And so suddenly this Twitter page that only follows 10 people, me being one of them because of my dress for the awards show. Wow. I wrote Damien and Damien wrote me back. And I was one of the first people to ever speak to Damien Echols when he came out of prison. Wow. And me and him started communicating. Like, he didn't even know what the internet was. Like, you know, he just came out of 18 years in solitary confinement. The most traumatic, awful thing ever. And I started talking to Damien. And so this was the story that I offered to Rolling Stone. I said, hey, Damien Echols just got released and I have communication with him for the past few months. I'd love to write about this case. And so my article got published and got on the cover of Rolling Stone.
On the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm so glad you told that story. I mean, what a wild fucking insane journey that was.
Insane. And I'm still friends with Damien. I talked to him. I talked to him recently, and he said it's so crazy how, like, we don't talk for several years, but every time we talk, it seems like we're like really old friends. And I'm like, I've always felt like I'm your really old friend. Like, even when I didn't know you, like, I always felt really, really deeply connected to Damien. I actually have his signature on my wrist.
Oh wow!
That represents life after death, and now he's a witch himself. That's what he works with.
Is he? Yeah. Oh, I have to do a deep dive now. I mean,
witchcraft was a lot of what helped him through his time in incarceration.
Wow. Okay, there's so much to dig into there. Jeez. Okay, well, here's a fluffy question. I don't even want to ask it. Who was your most embarrassing crush of all time?
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I can't say those things. I probably went out with all of them.
Yes, girl. That's fair. Okay, we'll keep that.
I went out with a lot of like my 90s crush idols and stuff like that.
You married a 90s crush idol.
Yeah. Also that.
Empire Records is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, changed my life, one of those. Same. So good for you, girl. I see you. I feel you. Where can our listeners find you?
Instagram, Twitter, Mayra Diaz Gomez. So it's MayraDiaz Gomez. Mayra Diaz Gomez, Twitter, Instagram, message me. I'll message you back.
Beautiful. Last one. Finish this lyric. Sweet dreams are made of this.
Who am I to disagree? You travel the world and the seven sea. Everybody's looking for something.
Got a girl. Yay! Thank you so Thank much. You. This was the best.
Yes, I love it.
I As you all know, Myra Diaz Gomez is not only a soul sister, she is a sister of the moon, and she has done so much in her life. She literally has chapters, which is not just a cheeky way of me talking about how she's this incredibly talented, intellectual, published author, journalist. And then she's just, you know, kind of put that all to the side and got into the crazy, weird world of professional wrestling that we all love. And as I always say, once you're in wrestling, you have your chosen family, and you very quickly fall in love with all your peers. And Myra is no exception to that rule. Speaking about weirdos, I would not be able to do this podcast without my badass punk rock girl band, The Wild On Team. My queen, my right-hand sister, editor and producer, Rochelle Duras, and our woman, our princess, our goddess of all things internet that helps us do the things that we don't know how to do, and marketing, our marketing specialist, Madison Golshani. Thank you, ladies. I love you. And again, to everyone who has held me and allowed space during this very challenging time for myself, my family, my friends, the loss of my brother-in-law, Steve Viola. Thank you, Steven, for giving me strength during this challenging time. I love you and I miss you. And until next week, stay calm. Keep calm. I still fucked it up. Keep calm and wild on. Blessed be.